The heel of Esav is not going to help anymore. You missed it. What are you accomplishing with that? And he said, we learned from over here that in Judaism we don't look at things like that. We don't look at how hard something is, if we will succeed, if we won't succeed. A person looks in front of them, what is there that I need to do? Whether it looks like it makes sense to me or not, whether it looks like I could change things or not, and I do it no matter what. All Yaakov could do at that moment was grab Esav's heel, so he grabbed Esav's heel even though it looked like it made no sense. A few seconds later, the Parsha tells us they're 13 years old. That day they turn 13, Esav's a little bit hungry, Yaakov gets the Bechorah and just sold it to him. Whoever could have thought when he's leaving that it would take something so simple to turn the entire story around? Once person does everything they could that's in their hand, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu takes over, it doesn't take anything in the world to quickly change the scenario and flip who's the Bechor. It doesn't even matter who came out of the stomach first. We're about to, in a couple of weeks, we'll be celebrating Hanukkah. And the Mishnah Berurah points out a difference between the miracle of Hanukkah and the miracle of Purim. The way the Jews reacted to the threat on Purim and the way the Jews reacted to the threat on Hanukkah. On Hanukkah, what was the threat against the Jewish people by the Greeks? They weren't threatening our physical survival per se, but it was a spiritual threat. They wanted us to leave the Torah, leave belief in the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and follow after their atheistic ways. The way that we went out and we battled them was with tooth and nail, with rocks, with whatever it is that the Jews had to fight with. The chances were completely bleak. You're fighting against tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people with weapons. You don't have weapons, you don't have that manpower, but they went to fight anyway. On Purim, we find an opposite method of attack. Haman, the threat to the Jewish people at that time was to kill them, to wipe them out. They weren't trying to make them go off the derech or leave Torah and mitzvot. They just wanted to kill the Jewish people. It was a physical threat. And to a physical threat, we see what was the response that Mordechai and Esther gathered all the Jewish people together to respond with. They responded with tefillah and they responded with limud Torah. Mordechai gathered all the kids together. It was giving shiur to tens of thousands of kids, and they were learning and fasting for 3 days straight. And the Midrash tells us that that's when everything turned over, and the threat from Haman was removed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the matter into his own hands, and then you know what happens next. There's two different ways of fighting a battle, and it depends what it is the threat that's coming against you is. And when the threat is a physical one, then the Mishnah Berurah points out that the way that a person responds is with a spiritual response, with a strengthening of tefillah and with a strengthening of Torah. We have in a couple of parshas from now that Yaakov, when he's going to now come and see Esav, so he prepares himself in three ways. We know he tries to woo Esav's favor by sending him presents. He has a plan for a war against him, and what would they do in that situation? And he also davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That a person comes with a battle plan with from a few different directions. Bakshi has been heading a special program of us all saying Tehillim and davening for the Refuah Shlema of our friend Caleb. And we have to fight this battle from a number of fronts. And one of the fronts also, our most powerful weapon that the Jewish people have, HaKol Kol Yaakov, Eidayim De'Esav. What's HaKol Kol Yaakov? Chazal say that the strength of the Jewish people is in their davening in the shuls and in their learning in the base midrashes. So if we're going to fight the battle properly, we have to take it from every angle that we could. And learning Torah is the most powerful thing that we have to fight with. You all learned probably by now Daf Yud in Brachos. So on Yud Aman Aleph, towards the bottom, when Chizkiyahu HaMelech was deathly sick, deathly ill on his deathbed, so and we know that his story turned around, Chizkiyahu said, he kicked Yeshayahu out of the room, and he said, Kach mekublani mibeis avi abba. This is what I received from Mesorah from my father's father. He was of the lineage of David HaMelech. Afilu cherev chada munachas al tzavar shel adam. Even if there's a sharp sword on somebody's throat, meaning it's as that dire of a situation like that, a person shouldn't withhold himself from asking for rachamim, because even now an entire situation could turn around. There's nothing that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have at his means to flip a situation around. on the next Amar, Yud Amud Beis, you saw the following Gemara, that one of the things that Chizkiyahu was praised for was that he took, there was a book of refuah, it was a book of cures. What do you do to cure all different illnesses? From Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech was a Chacham Mikal Adam. He knew the cure, what grass, what plant, what combination of things could take care of every single disease that's out there. And he made a book. What do you do in different situations? Chizkiyahu took it. Imagine, you have thousands and thousands of Jews sick with different things. They need this information. He took it, and he put it into Geniza. Why did he put it into Geniza? Why did he hide it away? And the Chachamim praised him for it. Most of Klai Yisrael was probably angry at him for this. What are you doing? We need this. This one's sick, that one's sick, this one's sick. We need this cure. But the reason why Chizkiyahu did it, Rashi explained, was that people were starting to depend too much, put their trust too much into the doctors and into medicine and into the written cures of the book. It wasn't that there was a problem with the cures. Shlomo HaMelech wrote the book. But if a person starts to depend on them and trust in them, then it ends up being counterproductive. It works against them because our trust has to be in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The difference between a Jew and a non-Jew is that we're all taking medicine, we're all going to the doctor, but a Jew knows that that's not where your cure is. There are people that take medicines and don't get better, there are people that take medicines and do get better, people that don't. It's not in the hands of the medicine. We're not allowed to rely on miracles, so we have to go about what everybody else does. But one of the explanations to the tefillah that we say every day, three times a day in Rafa'inu, is Baruch Atah Hashem Rofei Cholei Amo Yisrael. Hashem cures the sick of Am Yisrael. What? Hashem only cures the sick of the Jewish people. There aren't millions of sick non-Jews that Hashem cures also. So some Mefarshim explain on this bracha that, yeah, but it's different by the Jewish people. Because by the Jewish people we say, Rafa'enu Hashem v'nei Rafa, Hoshienu v'nei Vashaya. You cure us and we'll really be cured. You save us and then we'll really be saved. The non-Jews, when they go to doctors, they take their medicine, they're trusting in the doctor. So Hashem puts them into the hands of the doctor. Sometimes it'll work, and sometimes it won't work. When you put your trust not in the doctor, that you're just going about what you have to do, because you have to do so much dollars, you can't rely on America, but you're putting your trust not in that at all. You're directing all your concern, your worry, your trust in Hashem, so then your cure is going to come from Hashem. And Chazal say in a bunch of places, a cure from Hashem is completely different than a cure from a human being. When a human being cures you, the sickness can come back. They might not completely wipe out the disease. It could show up again later, because they don't get to the core of it. A cure coming from a Kodesh Baruch Hu could uproot it from its very core, that it should never come back at all. A cure from Hashem, there's nothing that can get in the way of it. A cure from a doctor, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So, Rofei Cholei Am Yisrael, Hashem cures the sick of Klai Yisrael because they're depending on Him. It says we're depending on Him, so He's not going to let us down. And He comes and He wants to show us that, yes, He is that source of trust. All statistics that are out there in medicine, and you look online, if somebody is this, somebody is that, those statistics are based on the non-Jewish world. It's not when a Kadosh Baruch Hu gets involved and somebody's learning Torah and somebody's davening. That's already above statistics. That we're not affected by that at all. It's a different statistic altogether when somebody is davening and when somebody is learning for the refuah shlema of somebody. The Chazon Ish says that in every generation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that there's a disease that doctors don't know the cure for. And the reason why he does that is that people should remember and realize that don't put your trust in doctors. They're not the answer. I have something else I can get you with that they don't have a cure for. And he said it would be dangerous if HaKadosh Baruch Hu if the scientists would then find a cure for cancer. He said because then something even worse would have to be created, some new disease, for us to still get the idea in order. This specific disease of cancer is specifically there, based on what the Chazon Ish is saying, in order to arouse us to realize not to put our trust in medicine and statistics, but to put it where the Jewish people always have, in a Kol Kol Yaakov, in davening and in learning. The Gemara Kiddushin, that some of you will get to, some of you will take another year or so till you get to, but in Daf Kiddushin Pei Beis says, the best of doctors go to Gehenna. That's why it's good to also be a rabbi, not just a doctor. The explanation that a few Mefarshim we saw say on that, that best of doctors, it's not a sin to be a doctor. It's a mitzvah to save a life, a huge mitzvah to save a life. You should. But what does the Gemara mean when it says the best doctor goes to Gehenna? If you're the best doctor, then you start to believe that I'm the one that's going to affect this person's life, whether it's going to go one way or the other. Gehenna, you're killing him with putting the trust in yourself. What saves a person is when your trust is in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Gemara in Kiddushin, Alam and Amabez, Shana Bet got to this. Shana Av learned this by heart. On the Pasuk Kriyat Shema, when it's talking about learning Torah, it says, Vesamtem. Vesamtem es dvarei eila alevachem. Vesamtem. So the Gemara says, what's Samtem? Samtam. Torah is a perfect medicine. Samtam, a perfect medicine. And Rashi explains, Samtam, shalem, complete. She'eno chaser shum hatzala. She'eno chaser shum hatzala. It's not lacking anything that it doesn't save for. There's nothing that Torah doesn't save you from. Limud HaTorah has in it the ability to save a person from everything. Not but anything. From everything. That's what Limud HaTorah could save a person from. There's two stories about the Shach. Truth is, one of them I heard maybe about Kibbe Eger, maybe the Rebbeim will correct me here. Somebody once came to the Shach. He's on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. Very difficult, deep, hard work. And he was toiling and learning, and somebody came over to him, and his son was deathly ill, and he asked him if he could daven for his son. So he picked up his head and he said, this Tosfos I'm going to learn right now, I'm going to learn this Tosfos for the Refuah Shleimah of your son. He finished learning the Tosfos, his son got better. There's another story of the Shach, but I also heard this about Rabbi Kiva Eger, that somebody who was very sick, and the doctors didn't know what to do with him anymore, so he came to the Shach, Rabbi Kiva Eger, and he asked him to help cure him, to daven for him, do something, what should I do? So Rabbi Kiva Eger, or the Shach, wrote a kameya. Ever hear of a kameya? This far I've heard of a kameya, an amulet. The Ashkenazim, we don't often go to Mekubalim, not some people do, but usually you expect that what is the Mekubal writing on a kameya, on an amulet that you're going to wear? Probably the Shemos of Hashem, or some tefillah that we can't understand in Aramaic, something that's going to ward off whatever it is that brought this sickness upon him. So Rabbi Kiva Eger, a litzvah gadol, usually you wouldn't expect him to be writing an amulet. He wrote an amulet and he said, wear this around your neck and don't look inside. After he got fully better and a bunch of years went by, he did what probably many of us would do. He broke it open and looked at what it said. It was a tosfos that was written out inside of the amulet. Or another version was, he said, I'm giving him the schar of this daf of Gemara that I learned, or whatever it is. And the Gemara in Erevin quotes a pasuk in Mishlei that says, Ulechol besaro marpe. In Mishlei it says about the Torah, Ulechol besaro marpe. Torah is a cure for any ailment of the body. And he says that unlike medicines, you give it and sometimes it has, you know, a bad side effect, or sometimes it doesn't work. But when Torah is the cure for something, then it's perfect and it goes right to the core without any negative side effects and completely... it doesn't come back afterwards. And the Avnei Nezer points out that when it comes to davening or learning for somebody, the power that one friend has for another friend is greater even than sometimes going to the greatest tzaddikim or talmidim chachamim of the generation. We find in davening that we say, v'yididim ha'avarta. Yididim, friends, you brought through the Yamsuf. Meaning it was that idea of Klai Yisrael, they were connected in a friendship way, loving, caring for one another, worried about one another, getting each other's back. It was in that schus that they were able to cross the Yam Suf together. Even if something looks as big as an ocean in front of you, it could be split specifically with friends getting each other's back and doing things one for the other. Someone asked, you know, when you ask Hashem to do something in the merit that I did this mitzvah or I learned that Torah, so Hashem then subtracts your merits for you. So you're not supposed to ask Hashem to do something in the merit that you did that. But it's different when it comes to using your merits for somebody else. This Rav Shmuel Tzvi Kowalski says, when you do mitzvahs or learn Torah for somebody else, you say, in the merit of my Torah, cure this person or help this person, then it's not that it subtracts from your merits. It's just like tzedakah. You give money, you don't have less money, because I'll say, aser b'shvil shetet asher. Give meiser so you can become wealthy. Whatever you give, you get back in return many more times that. When you give somebody the merit of your mitzvos or the merit of your Torah learning, you don't lose out. They get helped, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu sends you many more times that merit and that opportunity. usually when we come out with a learning incentive, some have come out already, some may come out in the future. So it's optional. If a guy wants to be part of this, he does it and he gets that reward. He doesn't. Nah, he just needed some type of encouragement to do it. It's weird to have an incentive which you're asking and calling upon and drafting everybody to be a part of. But you know that when Klal Yisrael is in danger and it's a time of war and there's imposing enemies coming from all directions, so an army might have a draft where there's no options. Everybody's in the army right now and everybody has a fight because it's a matter of life and death to every person living in that country, and they don't give them a choice anymore whether they want to fight for their country or they don't want to fight for their country. So there's some type of incentives where the reason why you're putting it out is to save somebody and to help somebody. You don't ask questions anymore if you're interested, if you're not interested, if you want to, if you don't want to. We're drafting together the whole yeshiva because everybody wants to, because nobody wouldn't want this. And we want to do another powerful learning incentive for Caleb. And the idea behind this is this, that we want that by next Thursday night, 11:59 at night, a week from tomorrow night, 11:59 at night, that all of Torah Chagah together, Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, will have learned 3,000 blot of Gemara by next Thursday night. And the plan to reach those 3,000 blot is the following. The Shana Aleph morning shiurim anyway had decided that for the next week we're going to be chazering the 3.5 blot that we learned in Kiddushin. Some people learned from Daf Beis to Daf Hey. Some skipped stuff in the middle and then went further than that. But either way, I think everyone comes out to around 3.5 blot. If everybody takes upon themselves to learn 8 times those 3.5 blot in the next week, really 8 days, until next Thursday night, during morning Seder and any extra time you could put in to chazer the Gemara 8 times, then we come pretty close to 3,000 times, 3,000 blot. And then hopefully Shana Bet and guys that could push in more will push further and get us to 3,000 blot. A lot of the Rebbeim felt that just the Gemara alone, it's too little for us to be expecting. The first couple of times might be hard if we're rough on the edges with some of the Gemaras, but definitely I think it's important that we add in at least 2 of the 8 times, and this is a condition in the 8 times, 2 of those times have to be with every single Rashi. The Rebbeim are here to help you with that. We'll sit around table. Some of us will, you know, with their shir, whoever wants to, will read the Rashis to you to help you get through, you know, at least 1 of those 2 times. But to go through every single Rashi on those 3.5 blot. Besides that, we've learned Tosfos, and there's no reason for us not to chazer those also. So it's going to go like this. Every chazara of those 3.5 blot that you do, your morning Rebbe will tell the shir which 2 Tosfos you need to chazer during that review. So during, and before you move on to the next cycle of 3.5 blot, you have to learn those 2 Tosfos that your Rebbe tells you to do. Sometimes they'll give you short ones, sometimes they'll give you long ones, before you move on to the next round. So hopefully by the end, we'll have chazered around 16 Tosfos by then. And this is tremendously powerful, not only for the refuah of Caleb, which is our main incentive and reason for wanting to do this, but you will all feel, hands down, whoever does this, no doubt, and every Shana Bet guy will swear on this, that you will be a different person after you chazer 3.5 blot 8 times. With Rashi, with Tosfos, you'll be on a different level altogether. When I ask you to push like this for the rest of the year, 1 week is something that we could do. I was thinking to myself this morning, Caleb had every reason in the world not to come this year. I imagine that most people, if anybody would be in this situation, would not have come this year. Caleb's parents had every excuse in the book, and almost every parent would have taken this not to send him this year. To send Caleb this year, the Mesiris Nefesh that Caleb had and his parents had to send him, and then to go through day after day after day, and you all saw him going up and down the Shraga stairs and sitting on the buses on the Shraga Teal Limb. We saw him in the Beis Midrash, how weak he was, and he pushed anyway. It didn't matter. He had way more than any of us have getting in the way of his learning, and he did it anyway. So, and he had to leave in the middle, and now he can't continue that. But he so deserves that we pick up that Mesiris Nefesh that he started for the learning that he wanted to do this year, that his parents wanted him to be able to do, and give him 3,000 blot of learning on behalf of Torah Chagah. And the Eitz Hara, whenever you have something big like this in front of you, he tries to come with every excuse in the book to stop you from doing it. This was too hard. Wow, they really overestimated what we could do. Or I have sniffles today. Or this is just not a good week for me. I have to write this essay or do this thing. You could do it anyway. We could do it anyway, and we have to do it anyway, because whatever is getting in the way of us, it's not reason enough for us not to be part of this. I don't think I needed to give this schmooze to pump up your own interest in doing this for Caleb. When I spoke to some of the Shana'af guys, Shana'af guys, about the celebration that we're going to do at the end, that I even forgot to tell you, they said, you don't even need it. Everybody's going to want to do this for Caleb. We anyway want that if and when we hit those 3,000 blot, we will then celebrate, and Torah Chag is going to take you to the Canada Center up north. And the Canada Center, it's like a big complex. There's a big ice skating rink, a big indoor pool, a great big basketball court. It has pool, it has ping pong, arcades. You don't need that. But we're going to do that to celebrate, because when you make a siyum on something, you celebrate, it's a covered for Torah. So we're going to give that covered for Torah by celebrating 3,000 blot that we're so proud to be able to do. Rabbi Kunstler either is here or he's on his way here. We have, there's going to be four signs up on the bulletin board downstairs. One with all the rules and explanation for anything that I might have forgotten or you want to just double check. But there's 3,000 boxes over there that's going to be hanging on the bulletin board right outside the Beis Midrash. Everybody should print their name in every box as you finish a blot. You finish a blot, you want to do another blot before you go outside, great. Every time you go out to the bathroom or to a break, any blot that you've covered so far, write your name in print, not in script, in print, in a box. Write them in order from 1 to 3,000. Don't skip around numbers. There's 18 secret doors in those numbers. And if you happen to sign in a certain number, then you will get different baked goods. I didn't speak to all the rabbis about it yet, but we'll make sure there are 18 baked goods that you'll randomly be awarded with throughout your travels through those 3,000 blocks.
Does it only have to be Kiddushin, or can we do like the 3,000?
Yeah, this is Kiddushin. This is from the first part of Kiddushin, that whatever your morning Seder did. If somebody is not part of a morning Seder, or isn't part of what their morning Seder learned, this either is a great opportunity now to catch up and do those 3.5 blot of Kiddushin, or for you there's an exception, you can pick a different group of blot that you chazer. We don't want this just to be straight blot. We want chazara to be a big thing here. We want to pick a different 5 blot, but it's only for something that's not part of a shir and hasn't been learning the first part of Kiddushin. Otherwise, it's Kiddushin all the way. Shana Bet, your shiurim, most of them are not taking out time in the morning for this. So for you, and this is not hard really to ask you guys to chazer something 8 times, for you that should be a little bit. It's only not even a tenth of how many times we would like to chazer things. Some people say, well, I already know this by heart. If you didn't learn it 101 times, Chazal say that you can't compare 100 times to 101 times. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, somebody caught him making a siyum on Shas the second time 101 times. The second on all of Shas. So you're definitely not on the second time 101 times. And you could do this. You could chazer what you've learned 8 more times and more. And you can find other times. Shana Bet you finish this by Shabbos. And if not, by next Thursday night, 11:59. And it'll be outside of Morning Seder. There'll be other times that Shana Aleph can work on this if you don't think that the Morning Seders will be enough. There'll be opportunity on Mishmar. You'll hear about that. This Mishmar, next week's Mishmar, there'll be time that you could learn. You could push after Night Seder for things. I expect the following. In the beginning, we're going to move slowly in the chart, because we're still weak in some of the Gemaras. As you hit Chazara 3, 4, 5, then the numbers are going to start going faster and faster and faster, because you're going to be holding in the Gemara more. You may not be doing Rashi anymore at that point, and it's going to move much quicker. So don't be weak of heart if in the beginning the chart's not filling up fast enough. You could listen to a shir that reads you the Gemara. Would it count for Rashi? It counts for the Gemara. If you're awake, if you're focused, and if you're understanding the shir, then listening to the shir counts. Shkak, starting this morning, I need a bang, have a... Oh yeah, sorry, I forgot to tell you a massive boom that we're adding to this whole thing. It's because it's obvious to me. When you're playing basketball, when you're playing baseball, and you go out to the field, I'm sure Rabbi Schneider said this mashal, will say this mashal, you don't bring your phone with you. You don't bring it. You could bring it, but it has to be off. Your blot only count when your phone is off. Your blot don't count when your phone is on. If you want to go outside the base and turn on your phone, great. You could do it as many times as you want. We don't recommend it, but you could do it as many times. But when you're learning your blot, your phone is off. When you're learning the blot, the phone is off. Otherwise, that blot is disqualified and you can't count it. You could do it for a week, 1 week. Come on. Does that look stupid? If we have an unfilled chart, it's going to go in the Torah Shraga history books. I'm going to look horrible. You're going to look terrible. It's going to be embarrassing. We're not going to want anybody to know this ever happened. We have to hit 3,000 plot. We have to hit it. And nobody can go under the radar. You're messing us up. If you go, this is everybody. Everybody. Whoever's not here, you got to pull them on. I expect guys to write pump-up lines in your Shana Aleph and Shana Bet WhatsApp groups if you see that the chart's not filling up enough. We don't need the Rebbeim to pump you up for this. Shkai.